WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here to Sunday morning. Can you believe that next week is the 10-year anniversary of Lehman Brothers just going away? Lehman Brothers. Over the next 6 months after that happened, stocks fell 46%. And people in America lost a lot of money. People around the world lost a ton of money. If you think about this now, what has it done to our psyche as investors? And that's part of what I want to talk about today. So here's where we're headed today. The psyche of investing in America right now and what the toll that calamity took on you, arguably, as an investor. As I go through some of these new numbers, this new study or a couple new studies, I think you're going to relate to how your mindset of investing really changed and potentially dramatically because of what happened, because of the calamity at Lehman and then the ensuing stock market years after that. Number two, arguably more important than that, and can you imagine being in the White House today? Can you imagine working right now in the White House? The president always drives news and always drives media, but they have endured what we're seeing today has been just a seismic shift in coverage with the president, with this president. And when the New York Times runs an anonymous op-ed from within the White House, can you imagine what it would be like to be part of that group? It's fascinating news. I love what former CEO of Sun Microsystems said this past week, Scott McNeely. He said journalists should have to make their public, they should have to make public their voting record. As the media is more and more biased in either direction than it's been in our entire lifetime. And you know that Money Matters, we are not a show about politics. This is not a show. This Money Matters is not about the politics of politics. It's about the money of politics. So I'm not going to jump up and down about the op-ed and talk about that. What I am going to do is take a look at the impact of arguably the largest piece of legislation that has come out of Washington, and that has to do with our economy. How is it working? You know exactly what I'm talking about. That's the massive tax reform that went into effect at the beginning of this year. We're in month 9, and it's been long enough to see some tangible results. And more importantly, it looks a lot like the 2003 tax cuts. And there's a real analog between these two periods of time. We can look back then and see what happened after 2003, because the same story is playing out right now with these 2018 tax cuts. And I want to be aware of what this economy should be doing, because we have a path that looks a lot like that not that long ago. I'm going to explore that today and see how the 2018, the brand new tax cuts, not brand new anymore, but this year, how they're really working and what they're doing for this economy. Also did a study about religion and retirement. And really, to be more accurate, it wasn't really about religion. It was about going to church. That's it. Just, do you go to church? And if you do, how often do you attend? And what does that mean for retirement happiness or not? And I just published this in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution this past Sunday and got a lot of feedback from it. I didn't really expect that, but got a ton of feedback, and I want to share that. So if you didn't read the AJC, which of course I recommend picking up the weekend edition or the Sunday edition of the AJC, I will share some of those results or some of the findings within church attendance, basically, and retirement happiness or lack thereof, or what that relationship looks like. How often do you go to church, and what does that really mean over time for your potential happiness? And again, just a study, just a survey. I'm just writing about what I found, and we'll get to that too. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. The kind of not a good stock market week. The Dow Jones was down just only fractionally, down 0.2%. S&P 500 down a full 1%. The NASDAQ, a much tougher week, down 2.5%. and a half percent. And really, the economic story, though, continues to be very significant to the upside. So the ISM manufacturing data that just came out for the August period of time is the highest rate we've seen in 14 years. Highest rate of manufacturing in the United States in 14 years. The payrolls, jobs report that just happened this past Friday that took a look at what happened during the month of August. We added over 200,000 jobs. And weekly unemployment claims fell to only 203,000, which is the longest we've seen. That's the lowest unemployment or weekly jobless claim number that we've seen in over a half a century. Just really tremendous. The unemployment rate still at right at 3.9%. And that's where we stand today. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. The phone lines are open. Ryan Ely here, as he is every Sunday morning, to take your calls and questions and then patch that through, and we'll see what we can get to this morning, because calls are our favorite part of Money Matters. So if you're worrying this week and you and your spouse are talking about an issue that has to do with investing or savings, or you're worried about tariffs, or you're worried about China, you're worried about something that is more, let's say, directly related to your specific situation, whether it's a pension question or should you take a lump sum or a monthly pension, should you be looking at other ways to be investing? Are you in a bunch of mutual funds that aren't working, or ETFs, or should you have individual stocks, or should you be scared of bonds today? What are you doing right now with money that concerns you? We're happy to give you a third party objective opinion, at least, and hopefully point you in the right direction. And that's exactly what we do and we'll continue to do right here on Money Matters on a Sunday morning. So only 1 hour. If you have a question, then we want to get to it in this 9 o'clock hour. So good morning. The number here in the studio, give us a call, 404-872-0750 is the number. Ryan Ely, producer for over a decade here, standing by. I'll take your call, talk it through. And if I don't get to it, half the time, Ryan will just answer your question, which is great. Ryan has been in the investment business with me for well over a decade. Half the time, he just answers your question and you don't even have to be on the air. But the number again, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let me go through some of these, how our behavior has changed. Before we get to taxes, these statistics are somewhat shocking. I've talked about this and kind of made the analogy that today's millennials, and really anybody that lived through the financial crisis and saw Lehman crash, and we saw the people taking boxes from their desks, leaving the building, never to go back. Lehman's closed, and then the cascade of the stock market after that got even scarier during kind of the depths or the worst period of the financial crisis. And I've always related that to anybody that cared at all about investing. If you're 15, you may not have thought about it all that much, except you may have seen your parents lose a bunch of money. And if you were 15 then, you're 25 today, and you still may be impacted by this. If you're 25 then and you're 35 today, you may have had, let's say you had $30,000 saved, which would have been a lot if you were a 25-year-old, and that maybe went all the way down to 15, and you understand how volatile stocks can be. I think it shaped the investment direction or the investment psyche to some extent for an entire generation of Americans. And here are some of the numbers now that really speak to that. So remember, after Lehman fell, the next 6 months, S&P 500 fell 46%. And it had started to go down. Then Lehman hit, and then it got even worse. In 07, 65% of Americans owned stocks. 65% of Americans had some sort of tie or investment in the stock market. And this is all from Gallup, by the way. This year, the number is all the way down to 55%. So we've dropped a full 10%. Of ownership of stocks in America, which is an enormous number. This is not a rounding error. So you've got this psychological trauma, despite having a 9-year bull market. I mean, the bull market that we've been in for the last 9 years made up all the losses, first of all. So the market is from the trough has come all the way back. And then we're up an additional 82% beyond making up for all the losses. And the entire time, investors have still continued to be worried and worried and worried and still pulled money out of stocks during this entire nine-year bull market. And there was a quote from an advisor in that I read this week too, and I think it really is a really interesting way to encapsulate how we feel and how emotional investing can be. And this advisor says, "Listen, I when I sit down with clients today, I can't emotionally." The clients say, "This is and think about how you would phrase this." Can you emotionally deal with another 2008 with your portfolio? Can you watch your portfolio endure another 2008? And that shapes how we invest. Otherwise, we'd all be 100% in stocks all day long, taking as much risk as we possibly could, knowing that over time, that's been the best place to be. Stocks, best place to be, long-term rate of return. But can you emotionally deal with another 2008? And I don't think another 2008 is happening anytime soon at all. But just the slight possibility that it could, and the fact that we just lived through it only a decade ago, it really shapes how we invest. Here's another survey that is just quantifies how scared we are of investing. This is a survey of over 2,000 people just released by another investment firm. That asked, do you think the stock market has gone up, down, or flat basically over the last decade? This is unbelievable. 48% of the 2,000 folks surveyed thought the stock market had not gone up in the last 10 years. So half of Americans say, market's been flat. Nobody's made any money. Half of America has the perception that that's what's happened. 18% of those folks said they thought the market actually had gone down. Remember, we're up over 300% from the nadir or the trough of 2009. And you had half of America that thinks it's the markets have done nothing, flat. And you have almost 20% of America thinks the market's gone down. Amazing how this has shaped us, or the financial crisis, almost the 10-year anniversary of Lehman, has shaped us to just only see the negative when it comes to investing. And if you can think about it, if there's anything that's been costly, is that misperception of how we're doing here as an economy. I just said, look, we're at 3.9% unemployment. Keep adding 200,000 folks onto employment rolls per month here in America. And that's been the trend. We're at 4.5% plus GDP, and probably even higher than that in the third quarter, yet Americans still think we're in squalor. That's a problem. And that's what we're talking about here today. We're going to run to news, weather, traffic, the Money Matters returns right here. News 95.5, AM 750, WSB.
Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. We're going to go right to the phones again, 404-872-0750. We're going to head to Brad, who joins us on the line. Hang on one second here. Brad joins us on the line from Marriott. Brad, what's going on? How can I help, my friend?
Good morning, Wes. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Well, I was calling you today because I worked for General Electric, specifically GE Healthcare, and GE is splitting off our division, our part of the company, into its own separate entity.
Right.
Without going into any vast detail, one of the benefits that I had working at General Electric, or that I still have, is a pension plan. And being a young guy myself, that was one of the things that I was utilizing to plan for my eventual retirement years and years from now. My question is, first of all, what's going to happen with that pension plan if GE Healthcare as a separate company doesn't continue it? And then secondly, if they don't continue it, how should I appropriately plan for my retirement after that?
Super important things to think about as they go through this transition. So for folks, and we've all probably seen or heard about the stock price of General Electric, of course, fallen on hard times to some extent. It's still a viable company. It's just had trouble growing its earnings, and that's effectively led it to leave the Dow Jones Industrial Average, even though it was the last original component. So it needs to restructure, right? So what Brad's talking about here, GE has a plan to reduce $25 billion worth of debt. And in order to do that, this is a huge piece of it. They're spinning out the healthcare. Veritas, private equity firm, basically buying the private the healthcare piece, which, by the way, has $18 billion of the debt. So it's a big piece of that restructuring. And my thought here, and this is typically when companies do this and they split out, you are going to, this is my opinion here, Brad. The worst case scenario is that the new owner effectively freezes the pension plan and you still get what you were promised under the old pension rules. So worst case scenario, they will say, okay, you still have this pension. We have this pension obligation. We're taking on that pension obligation. We can't just say, okay, sorry, new owner, forget it. They still owe you that money. And in order to do that, what I've typically seen happen is that they're going to try to monetize it, meaning they'll try to get it off their books during their period of restructuring. So I wouldn't be surprised if you get a piece of paper in 6 months that says, hey, Brad, your pension was going to be worth $2,000 a month. You are, and how old are you, Brad, by the way?
38.
I wouldn't be surprised if you get a piece of paper and an offer that says, hey, we're going to give you some sort of lump sum in order to get this off our book. So it's going to be worth $2,000 a month. When you are age 60, you're only 38. You've got this 20 plus year window before you're really going to get the money. So they're going to dangle a carrot in front of your face today. That's probably a really low number, right? So a pension that would be $2,000 a month could be worth something around $500,000 for them to give you, or $400,000. In this case, they might say, well, here's $80,000 because you're so young, so that we can get this off their books. You're going to have to evaluate the future value of that money when you get that offer and say, is it worth taking the cash today to roll it into an IRA, or just leave them on the hook so that they're going to have to pay me my $2,000 a month when I'm age 60. That's probably what's going to happen. So when you get that offer, my friend, give us a call here on the show or just throughout the week, and I'll help you solve the math behind that equation. You can go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Email us the numbers when you get them, and I'll try to figure out what's the best deal for you, man. Thank you for the call, Brad. We're going to run to news, weather, traffic. You're listening to Money Matters right here, News 95.5 AM 750 WSB.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss, certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. Wes Moss and Ryan Ely here to take your calls and your questions, help you navigate through a crazy world that we live in, politics and money. You know, today, Money Matters is not about the politics of politics, but we very often talk about the money of politics. And I want to get to what this tax cut, the 2018 tax cut, is doing to the economy and arguably to the stock market. We have an analog with the 2003 tax cuts, and there's a lot of parallels between the two. So we get an idea of kind of where we're headed in the phase that we are in, being 9 months into the tax cut. I'm going to get to that right here in this segment. Before we do that, we'll go to the phones and we'll have time for at least one more call, and we're going to do that, the number 404-872-0750. So let's start with that. We have Charles and Marietta. Charles, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. How can I help, man?
Yeah, so I've got a little bit of money to play with, and just recently started buying ETFs. I was wondering, A, if that's the best route to, like, for just, you know, playing in the stock market or an investment, and then B, how to pick ETFs and when to trade them.
Charles, a couple questions I have for you on this. Where, kind of, what phase are you in? Are you just getting going? How old are you?
29.
So you're in an early phase accumulation. You're in accumulation for a long time, and accumulation versus, by the way, distribution. So really, I think of two major phases. Really, you could say three. You're getting out of debt phase, your accumulating phase, and then the distribution phase. So you invest a little differently in all three of those. But I would say the accumulation phase is obviously, it's a very long period of time. It's call it since you were 25 all the way until you are able to stop working. And then you kind of go into distribution. So you got a long time in accumulation. And the key here in the world that we live in today, the ETFs have proliferated to the point where you have so much choice now to access all these different, either very broad areas of the market or super specific areas of the market, and to do it for really low cost. And that's been the positive of ETFs. So as somebody in their late 20s that has arguably 30 years left to save and accumulate and accumulate and accumulate, I would start out by just doing the broad ETF. So I would own the S&P 500. I would own dividend stock ETFs as well. And I think that we've gone through a long period of time of companies that are, quote, value-oriented, dividend-oriented, have gotten a little bit of a short shrift due to super high-growth companies like Apple, like Amazon. Where I would head for you, I would start out with a couple of really core ETFs. One of my largest holdings personally on the ETF side is a dividend stock ETF. The symbol on it is SDY. It's effectively a group of companies that has been able to raise the dividend for a very long period of time. And if any company stops doing that or cuts their dividend, they get kicked out of the ETF. So it kind of self-selects companies that are able to increase their earnings and then translate that into cash flow to you. Typically a sign of health for a company. Not always, but typically a very good sign. So think about owning something like an SDY that's more specific to dividend companies, and then something as broad as SPY. P as in Paul, for the S&P 500. That's just an easy, broad 500 companies. You could then continue to get a little bit more specific and start owning sectors of the market like energy right now that still, I think, has a long way to go to recover. XLE is an energy ETF. There's going to be a big shift, by the way, in about a month, or actually not really a couple of weeks, in ETFs, in the sectors of the market to begin with. Probably need to do a whole segment on this, Charles, but they're gonna spin out a lot of the communication companies from technology, and there's gonna be a new communication sector within the market. So we're growing. There's gonna be more emphasis. Companies like Apple will be a bigger part of the technology ETF, which is XLK. I want you to make sure that you start broad, build your foundation on an ETF that has 100 stocks in it or a couple hundred stocks in it. And then over time, if you want to get more specific to sectors, start adding sectors. And then you can get even more specific if you want to get into niche areas like, let's say, buy certain kinds of biotech companies. Or if you want to get even more specific and do just defense companies, you can find an ETF for all of those. So at 29, listen, start broad. And then start building more specifics ETF as you find interest in other areas of investing. That, to me, is another such a great piece of why ETFs have proliferated, is that not only are they low cost, but you can then access now so many different areas of the market because ETFs have evolved over the last decade to allow you to do that. And now there's just so much choice, which is one of the biggest, one of the most difficult things about investing is, hey, I have a million choices, and it kind of paralyzes a lot of folks. Hey, where do I go? I can do so many things, it's hard to even get going. So get going with your fundamental broad ETFs, add in some sectors over time, and if you want to get specific at some point, ETFs are still a really good place to do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it's still a good investment vehicle for somebody that is accumulating. I've covered all my 401k, my Roth IRA, I've really tried to max those out every year. And then now I just kind of want to spread it out. But, from an investment vehicle point, I mean, this is, I guess, where I've turned. Is that still a good decision?
It absolutely is. And I think it's only getting better because, Charles, ETF prices, the cost to hold an ETF is only going lower. So that's a good thing for you. And you have more choice and they're less expensive. And you still get a fair amount of diversification. I still like individual stocks, Charles. I still really like owning individual shares of specific companies. However, you don't necessarily need to do that right now. I think that the key here is mass accumulation, as much as you can put into various ETFs inside your Roth, inside your regular IRA, inside of your inside of a brokerage account. So yes, ETFs are a very good vehicle. I'm glad you're using them. You can use them for hopefully the rest of your investment life. And not only are they a good vehicle, I think they're only getting better. Charles and Marietta, thank you for your call. Good morning. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Money Matters. And one of the areas that we wanted to talk about today has to do with, and what prompted this, I think, to me, as I saw that how crazy things must be if you are in the Trump White House right now. I mean, imagine somebody on your staff writing an anonymous letter to the New York Times. About, you know, and obviously a very negative letter. Just a kind of a fact. I mean, when has that happened in our lifetime? And I'm not really, again, we're not about the politics of politics here on Money Matters, but about the money of politics and how policy impacts the economy and the stock market. And I'm not going to jump up and down about the op-ed. That's not what we really do here. But I want to talk about, though, and see through what looks maybe to the outside that there's chaos. I don't know if I really believe that, but what I want to know is that what are the policies that have been implemented and how they're really, what are the numbers behind what they're really doing? So just objectively, how's the economy doing? And what are these tax cuts doing? And what, if we could look back at 2003, it actually gives us a really good idea of where we're headed with the changes we made to the economy due to the 2018 tax cut. So we're 9 months in. It's been long enough to see some tangible results of the new tax system that we're now under here in the United States. And 2003 can show us the way, and we're going to play that out over the next year here into 2019. So the tax cuts in the period of 2003, in 2003 tax reform, they're not exactly the same as what we just saw today, but there are a lot of similarities between the two. And we can use that as a guide. The U.S. economy, we know that we're seeing significant growth, at least in the second quarter here in 2018, over 4% growth, real growth. If you look at nominal growth, you don't adjust for inflation, it was over 7%, by the way, gross domestic product. And when was the last time you heard a number that large for the United States economy? And if you look at the Atlanta Federal Reserve, we're tracking in another significant growth quarter for the third quarter of 2018. So we see this positive trend for the economy, a positive trend for the labor market, and a positive trend for really to the investment landscape. It's obviously created a lot of, it's been a real tailwind for equity markets. We just talked about how sentiment has shifted and Americans still think, half of America still thinks the stock market isn't up over the last decade when it's obviously we recovered all the losses of through the financial crisis and we've tacked on another over 80%. So here's what's happening. Like the 2003 tax cut, the 2018, the tax cut that we're experiencing today was very much bruised and battered along the way to even get into to be voted on and come to fruition. Remember all of the remember the sentiment around the tax changes. All the tax, and this is go back to 2017. All these tax cuts would just go to the rich. The tax cuts were all going to big companies. Big companies would never use the money for anything good like wage increases or their own expansion. They wouldn't have a material impact on or a positive effect on growth or even the growth of tax receipts for the government so that we could reduce the deficit. And the quote, the tax cuts would, quote, cost way too much. The 2003 tax cuts faced a lot of those same bullets. And the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, published multiple reports that ultimately missed by $1 trillion worth of economic expansion. They undershot what the 2003 tax cuts would do to the economy by over $1 trillion. And that was only over a three-year period. That's a big miss. They were both immediate. So number two here, the 2003 and the 2018 tax cuts were both relatively immediate. versus other tax cuts in history that were phased in. So the way that they were rolled out here in 18, a lot like 2003. And that's a big reason their impact looks similar in stimulating multiple parts of the economy. Remember, as early as February, tax withholdings changed and Americans started getting higher net take-home paychecks. Number three, well, again, we're comparing 03 tax cuts till today. What's it teach us about where we're headed now? The size of the tax cuts are pretty similar. Both 03 and the 2018 tax cuts were very similar size relative to GDP. Number four, the kind of cuts were similar. In 03, we had a big capital gains tax cut, and there was a 50% cut taken in the form of expensing capital for companies. 2018, similar. We had not only individual and corporate tax cuts, but corporations are now able to take a 100% expense on capital purchases. And then number five on this list of similarities between 03 and 2018, 2018, I would say, is even more significant. And it's been a huge impact for individuals and businesses, and arguably the most significant piece of tax reform that makes 2018 larger and more impactful has to do with repatriation. Hey, companies in America, you've got trillions of dollars overseas. You got to bring it back. And so now we've seen through 2018, $700 billion worth of corporate cash come back to the United States. That's a big number. No wonder the U.S. dollar's been so strong. No wonder U.S. interest rates have done what they've done. And this is because of these massive amounts of cash coming back to U.S. coffers. A lot of that money, I think, had to buy treasuries. It's kept interest rates lower than where they otherwise would have gone due to how strong this economy has been. We're going to continue to talk about some of these results of where we're headed then and now when Money Matters returns. Weather and traffic, and then more Money Matters right here, News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. Good morning. We are back in business here. Money Matters. We got a prize pack, and then we're going to go right back into the results of what this tax reform is doing. Ryan, you want to just quickly jump in and we'll do prize pack real quick before we get back into taxes?
Why, yes. The weekend prize pack is a pair of tickets to Paul Simon's Homeward Bound, the farewell tour, coming to Solaris Amphitheater at Lakewood on September 12th. Tickets are on sale now at livenation.com. And Homeward caller number bound. Five, caller the prize five. Pack's yours.
404-741-0750. So we went through the similarities of the 2003 versus today's tax cuts. Post tax cuts in 2003, GDP in America surged 7%. 7%. We talked about this about a year ago, and a big part of my conviction of why 2018 would be such a strong economic year came from looking at the results of the 2003 tax cuts. And it's basically happening all over again. After that initial surge, GDP growth settled in at a healthy plus 3% level, 3% plus. And that was after the bursting of the tech bubble in 2000, 2001. And we saw a surge in GDP right here in the United States in the second quarter of 2018 as these new tax cuts have kicked in. Q2 came in at the same nominal rate of 7%, real rate of 4% that adjusts with inflation. And the GDP forecaster for the Atlanta Fed right here in our backyard now says that we're tracking or pointing to over 4.5% growth for the third quarter here for the U.S. So it looks a lot like the surge in the second quarters or the two quarters that followed the 2003 tax cuts. So we're seeing a lot of the same activity and the same economic growth and the same economic expansion. It's shown up in U.S. consumer spending and retail sales. U.S. consumers are now buying more as their real per capita disposable income is going up. That happened for the entire year, also following the 2003 tax cuts. And retail spending tracked that increase almost perfectly. We're seeing the same trend in income and retail spending today. After tax inflation, income growth equals, which is what we track as personal or per capita disposable income. It's basically everything you make minus your taxes and inflation. That's continued to go up. What is my real take-home pay in America? those trend lines about basically after what I put in my pocket and how much I spend, or those two increase together. It happened in 03, happening right now in 2018. And the same thing's happening on the corporate side. And I think that, so if you look at all of this, the final analysis here is that despite all the what the media reports on and the chaos in Washington and the White House and op-eds, anonymous op-eds about how awful everything is, I mean, forget about that. It doesn't even matter. What matters is what the policy, how that's impacting the economy. You may love the president and the White House. You may hate the president and the White House. But don't cloud yourself with the politics of politics when what really matters to you as an investor is the money of politics. And right now, we have history has been a guide already. What tax cuts do to the United States economy, it works. It is a tailwind. And we're in that same phase right now. And that looks as though we've got at least another 6 months of that, maybe another year of that. Are we going to go into recession again in the United States? Absolutely. But we're on track to eventually to be the longest economic expansion in history as we continue on this path. And I think we've got some runway. We've got some time. So with that, you know, I didn't even get to more church is good with my religion and happiness survey, which we're going to have to get to next Sunday. Or you can just go to the AJC and find how religion fits into retirement happiness at AJC.com. Wonderful. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Find me and the team throughout the week at WesMoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Stay tuned to the best programming on the planet right here. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.